Explain gardening for the Gulf Coast with Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Oh, it's a beautiful Sunday morning, isn't it? It's a great Sunday morning. The heat's going to be up a little bit, but that's what it's supposed to do. More than likely, it will rain. It's what it's supposed to do. It's Gulf summer. We got lots to talk about this morning. We got lots to talk about in your yard. And we welcome your calls. Feel free to give us a call, and you can also text us pictures, 251-343-0106. Hey, some people think I don't talk enough about grass on this show. And some people are mistakenly believe that I don't even like grass. Oh, boy, they have no idea how wrong they are. Listen, I've been thinking about grass all week. That's all I think about right now. And I know that what you want me to talk about is where grasses are concerned, is how to mow it. I'm going to tell you how not to mow it. I'm going to tell you why I don't want to mow it. I'm going to tell you why the fact that we've mowed grass all this time means we've missed all the important stuff about grass. Grass, I've been thinking about it. So what we know about grass, folks, and when we talk about grass, we talk about St. Augustine grass and, zoysia grass and Bermuda grass and centipede grass, as if the whole world is about those kinds of grasses. You know, here's what I want to talk about. Here are the grasses I want to talk about. I want to talk about this beautiful wild rye that's coming up everywhere, the native wild rye. It's amazing. Not the wild rye people plant, but I'm talking about the beautiful wild rye that's blooming right now all across Alabama. I want to talk about the hair grasses, the muley grasses, the sweet grasses, the vernal grasses, the reed grasses. I want to talk about drop seed grasses. Oh, man, there's so many different kinds. I want to talk about side oats grama. I want to talk about the bluegrasses. I want to talk about broom sedge. Remember broom sedge? Broom sedge held your world together. There wouldn't be an Alabama after all we did to it if it weren't for broom sedge. It just literally stitched Alabama back together again. I want to talk about big blue stem. I want to talk about little blue stem. I want to talk about chalky blue stem. I want to talk about Indian grass, and not just the golden-headed Indian grass. I want to talk about the chocolate-covered Indian grass, where the flowers are just absolutely the color of fuzzy chocolate, the most amazing-looking flowers I've ever seen, the beautiful, beautiful Indian grasses. I want to talk about toothache grass. Man, I could talk about toothache grass for the whole show. Why can't I talk? We'll talk about cord grasses. I want to talk about all the great cord grasses growing along the coast. I want to talk about spartinas. I want to talk about Spartina pectinata and Spartina bakeri and all these beautiful grasses that make up our coastal marshes and are the reasons why we have shrimp. I want to talk about Tripsicum. I want to talk about gamma grass. I want to talk about this beautiful thing called gamma grass. I've been waiting in it. It's the grass is growing up to my neck. It is beautiful. These beautiful, big, beautiful leaves of gamma grass, dark green with these crazy heads that stick up taller than I am, with their little signal of flowers at the top. And if you break it down, it looks like these little weird skeletal cases with the seeds in it. You know why? They're closely related to corn. It's one of the great, many people think it may have even played a big role in the development of corn. And this gamma grass is just growing everywhere. You can actually pop the seeds. It's incredible. Eat them just like popcorn. It's incredible the number of grasses we've got out there. We could do a whole show on them. And I want to tell you why it makes a difference to understand that Mobile County, You may not know this, but Mobile County is on record for having the most grasses, the most documented grasses of any county east of the Mississippi River. And the number of grass species that grow in Mobile County, and there are hundreds, hundreds, maybe even into the thousands. I'm not sure. I'll have to count one day. It far exceeds anything you read about in the Midwestern prairies. They were everywhere, these grasses. Now we've decided, well, we can only have five grasses, and we have to mow them all the time. So we never understand. Let me tell you what happens when you don't mow grass, when you don't mow our native grasses. We've got a little field. It's not big. It's not big enough. It's just this little bitty island, a little bitty island in the middle of just messed up places everywhere, cornfields, everything else. But it is absolutely incredible what happens when you don't mow. The birds. You have bird feeders? I got a meadow. It brings things that bird feeders could never bring in numbers that no bird feeder could ever approximate. The birds are desperate. It's like they're saying, man, this is what we're about. This is where we should be. This is where the seeds are. This is how we live. This is how we used to live. And they are flocking to this meadow. It's incredible. We talk about St. Augustine grass and zoysia grass and Bermuda grass and centipede grass, as if the whole world is about those kinds of grasses. You know, here's what I want to talk about. Here are the grasses I want to talk about. I want to talk about this beautiful wild rye that's coming up everywhere, the native wild rye. It's amazing. Not the wild rye people plant, but I'm talking about the beautiful wild rye that's blooming right now all across Alabama. I want to talk about the hair grasses, the muley grasses, the sweet grasses, the vernal grasses, the reed grasses. I want to talk about drop seed grasses. Oh, man, there's so many different kinds. I want to talk about Sidoates grama. I want to talk about the bluegrasses. I want to talk about broom sedge. Remember broom sedge? Broom sedge held your world together. There wouldn't be an Alabama after all we did to it if it weren't for broom sedge. It just literally stitched Alabama back together again. I want to talk about big blue stem. I want to talk about little blue stem. I want to talk about chalky blue stem. I want to talk about Indian grass, and not just the golden-headed Indian grass. I want to talk about the chocolate-covered Indian grass, where the flowers are just absolutely the color of fuzzy chocolate, the most amazing-looking flowers I've ever seen, the beautiful, beautiful Indian grasses. I want to talk about toothache grass. Man, I could talk about toothache grass for the whole show. Why can't I talk? We'll talk about cord grasses. I want to talk about all the great cord grasses going along the coast. I want to talk about Spartinas. I want to talk about Spartina pectinata and Spartina bakeri and all these beautiful grasses that make up our coastal marshes and are the reasons why we have shrimp. I want to talk about Tripsicum. I want to talk about gamma grass. I want to talk about this beautiful thing called gamma grass. I've been waiting in it. It's the grass is growing up to my neck. It is beautiful. These beautiful, big, beautiful leaves of gamma grass, dark green with these crazy heads that stick up taller than I am, with their little signal of flowers at the top. And if you break it down, it looks like these little weird skeletal cases with the seeds in it. You know why? They're closely related to corn. It's one of the great, many people think it may have even played a big role in the development of corn. And this gamma grass is just growing everywhere. You can actually pop the seeds. It's incredible. Eat them just like popcorn. It's incredible the number of grasses we've got out there. We could do a whole show on them. And I'm going to tell you why it makes a difference to understand that Mobile County, you may not know this, but Mobile County is on record for having the most grasses, the most documented grasses of any county east of the Mississippi River. And the number of grass species that grow in Mobile County, and there are hundreds, hundreds, maybe even into the thousands. I'm not sure. I'll have to count one day. It far exceeds anything you read about in the Midwestern prairies. They were everywhere, these grasses. Now we've decided, well, we can only have five grasses, and we have to mow them all the time. So we never understand. Let me tell you what happens when you don't mow grass, when you don't mow our native grasses. We've got a little field. It's not big. It's not big enough. It's just this little bitty island, a little bitty island in the middle of just messed up places everywhere, cornfields, everything else. But it is absolutely incredible what happens when you don't mow. The birds. You have bird feeders? I got a meadow. It brings things that bird feeders could never bring in numbers that no bird feeder could ever approximate. The birds are desperate. It's like they're saying, man, this is what we're about. This is where we should be. This is where the seeds are. This is how we live. This is how we used to live. And they are flocking to this meadow. It's incredible. You don't like looking at birds. You like shooting them. That's okay. Turkey? You think turkey thrive in the cornfields and the cotton fields and the fescue grass pastures and the Bermuda grass lawns? They love these meadows with all of these grasses incredibly high. You know why we don't have quail anymore, my friends? You know what happened to our quail? We decided we'd mow all of our grasses. We decided we only needed five kinds of grasses, and we'd mow them all the time. Heaven help us. It's too bad. It's too bad. You have no idea how rich this world of grasses is. One of the things we're working on is looking at some of these native grasses for food. And there's a lot of people working on that. It's like we just said, oh, well, whatever Europe had, that's what we'll do. And we never thought about, boy, there was a long history of using our native grasses for foods and grains. And we're beginning to think about that, too. Alabama is one of the great centers of beautiful native grasses. And if you don't think I love those grasses, you don't understand. You don't get it. I love grasses. I wish we talked about grasses every week. And I wish we didn't talk about mowing them. I wish we talked about growing them and making of them what they used to be and letting them be part of this great state of Alabama and contribute to the wildlife and the beauty of this place the way they once did. Incredible place. Most of the state was, in one way or another, grasslands, including the biggest, most wonderful grass of all, the grass that got 30 feet tall, bamboo. Covered so much of the state, it was an incredible part of the state's heritage. This incredible grass that we've forgotten, this incredible grassland of bamboos, we called it the canebrake. Oh, man, can we talk about grasses? Let's talk about grass. Let's talk about how to manage grass. Let's talk about what happens when you just let grass grow and how to manage it so that you maximize the birds and the turkey and the quail and the deer. It's an amazing thing. Maybe you even find a way to feed yourself out of these beautiful grasslands. It's incredible. It's an incredible thing to think about. So, yeah, I want to talk about grass. Feel free. Let's call. Let's talk about grass. Let's see what grasses are. You got some grasses you want to identify? Let's talk about it. But don't send me pictures after it's been mowed. Let it flower. Let it grow. And then we'll talk about it. We'll talk about how to get some of those native grasses back, too. It's an amazing thing. Give us a call. We talk about your place in the world. We talk about the Gulf Coast. We talk about Alabama. We talk about what it's like to live here. We talk about how to make life better here by understanding where we are. Give us a call. 251-343-0106.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Yo, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. And we got lots of things going on. I've started a grass attack here, and it'll be fine. We're all gonna come out of it for the better. Hey, listen, grasses are lovely things. They're beautiful things. I want to do the whole show on grasses, but we don't have to talk about just grasses. And I'm sure others of you will have questions. I got a great question by text from Mark, who wants to know about planting little bluestem in the black belt. And that is a question. I'm just delighted to talk about that. It is such a great question. Little bluestem grass, one of the great grasses of Alabama, one of thousands, I think, that grow throughout the state, and just absolutely a beautiful, beautiful grass. What I need to know, Mark, is there's a couple of important things to ask, and one is where you are, what the soils are like, and I want to talk to you about how to develop grasses. A lot of times it's better to understand what grasses are already on site, and there are probably a lot of grasses in the seed bed, as we like to say, down in the ground, that are just waiting for some sunlight. I mean, we create these dense forests that nothing can grow in, no wildlife can make use of. Or we create the fescue pastures, on the other hand, that are more sterile than a patch of concrete. And our Bermuda grass pastures, whichever. And there's nothing in between. But there are, in the seed bed of that forest, there are probably some great grasses. And there could be many. And it depends on what you want to do. Depends on what kind of wildlife you want. How you want to get to it. No need to focus on just one grass, because the black belt was the center of many grasses. And it was the interaction of all of those grasses that made the black belt so rich. So it's not just little bluestem, which is a great grass. It's all of the broom sedges as well. The other blue stems, and the chalky blue stems, and the big blue stems, and the gamma grass, and the side oaks grama, and I can go on and on and on. So Mark, give me a call when you get a chance. Lowndes County, good. I love Lowndes County. We can talk about that till the cows come home. And we actually, just give me a little sense of where in Lowndes County it is. Give me a call, because I think we probably want to talk about it. So I know we've got some callers. Who's our first caller this morning? Okay, good. I'm listening. Hey.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good.
I want to talk about my lawn. I live in Satsuma, Alabama, where we have a lot of sand. And we've lived in our house for 20 years. And some places, my grass does fine. But in other places, the dirt is like concrete. What's the best way to get grass to grow in those areas? Am I going to have to, dig it up so that the grass can get through with my sodded? Or what's the best thing to do?
Well, I got to start out by telling you this, because it's kind of how I started out this show. You know, one of the interesting things is Alabama is a place of many grasses, many different kinds of grasses, thousands of kinds. One of the issues that we have in a place like Alabama, where there are so many insects and so many diseases because the growing season is so long, because it's so hot and it's so moist, is that when you plant one grass and expect it to take over a whole area, you always run into a problem, because it's like you create a big target. So from a lawn perspective, there is never a perfect grass to be mowed. It's an unnatural situation. It's hard to manage. So I'm never going to tell you.
I have several different kinds of grasses growing in my yard.
And that's good. That's a good thing. And you just kind of let them fight it out. I mean, basically what you want is a place that you can walk through so the ground doesn't wash out from underneath you. And so you want to mow it. There's a couple of things. I always have to tell people when there's a problem with the grass, make sure you're mowing it as high as you can during this time of year. If you've been cutting it short, and by that I mean less than 2 inches, that's almost certainly the problem. With most grasses, it's better to cut at least 3 inches high. With St. Augustine, it's good to cut it 4 inches high or even higher. So the height at which you cut your grass is going to make a huge difference, particularly on those sands. One way to envision it is that the lower you cut your grass, the shorter the roots are. It's just almost inevitable because short grass can't support a deep, well-developed root system. And so that short root system can't penetrate into the sand to get moisture, can't follow the moisture deep into the sand where it would go. So make sure you raise that grass height as much as you possibly can. Now that you've got some gaps, let me tell you got some gaps where there is no grass growing, nothing growing, maybe some moss will eventually grow there if it's shady enough. But as long as are these patches where grass is not growing, are they in full sun?
They get one of the patches that I'm thinking of right now gets afternoon sun. Say after 12 o'clock, it gets sun until about 4.
Yeah, so shade could be a big issue here because most grass likes a lot of sun. It's hard for me to say, but that could be an issue.
Right.
And that may be part of the reason that you're having a problem there.
I do have a big spot under my oak in the front that's real shady, but I've seen in my neighborhood people have grass under their oak trees that's just like mine.
Yeah. Well, so here's here's what happens. There's a lot of difference in the amount of light that gets under that oak tree, and if your limbs are hanging down very low or lower than the other limbs on the street, that's the big problem. It's not the light from overhead, it's the light from the side. That's the first thing you need to know when you're comparing grasses.
Okay.
Secondly, if different grasses do differently in shade. So that's the second thing. So they may have a grass that's better adapted. The third thing is that grass is already established. If it's already well established under a tree and it already has deep soil, then it may persist there as long as there's good light coming from the side. And so that's a benefit too. But your situation is different. I can't tell you why, but just recognize that it's a different thing. Let me tell you, you could fight this. You could do anything you want. It won't make any difference to that area under that oak tree, because it's casting so much shade, and it's going to be very hard to establish a conventional lawn grass under there. We don't have many choices, but none of them will work. In that situation, I strongly recommend, and I tell people this over and over, plant monkey grass. It works great. Just plant monkey grass there. It'll hold the soil. You can actually mow it. Don't mow it right at first. Let it get a little height on it. Let it spread. It'll be great. It'll tolerate that shade. You might want to lift the limbs to give a little light from the side. That's the most important light. But plant monkey grass there under the tree. Now, okay. The area that's the other areas, I can't tell because it sounds like you got a shade problem, and that's a hard thing to deal with. You may have a root competition problem as well. But if they're in patches that are getting enough sunlight, and I mean by enough sunlight, we really mean 6 hours a day. That's enough sunlight for grass. In those areas, if you've lost your grass, the soil's getting compacted, you might want to have to break the soil up just a little bit. So here's what I'm going to suggest, so that we don't have to spend forever talking about this. Let you send me a picture of those areas in the rest of the yard. Can you do that? Just take a picture with your phone and send it to me by text?
Sure.
And then call me back in the next hour and let me look at it. And yes, ma'am, you just send it to this number you just called. Just text it there, and I'll take a look at it, and let's try to diagnose that a little better.
Okay. Will do.
All right.
Thank you.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Hey, I've got a great pick. I know we've got some callers. I don't want to – we're going to have to take a break very shortly. So we're going to get to you. Hold on. Hold on, folks. We're going to be back. And I got a picture from the Chickasaw Bottoms of something called Cleome. It's not a native plant. It's a plant that people plant in their gardens from seed. I do see it spreading in the wild just a little bit. And there it is in the Chickasaw Bottoms, Cleome, C-L-E-O-M-E. Look it up. Interesting plant. Hey, we're going to be back. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast sunny morning with Plain Gardening. John in Irvington sent me a picture of a plant that he saw in the wild. It's a tree. The leaves are alternate. They're not opposite each other. They're on a stem that's kind of a dark brown stem. The leaves have a little bit, as John points out, they're a little bit serrated. You know what that means? It's like a little serrated knife on the edge. Just little bitty serrations on the edge of the leaf. Very good diagnostic there, John. You know what I think it is, John? Here's another way to think about leaves. When you're going through the woods, one thing I always do, and it's very helpful, it's just a wonderful experience anyway, is it's not just don't use your eyes. Don't just use your eyes. Eyes are great. Use your nose. Sometimes use your mouth. Take those leaves, crush them. Crush them in your hand, kind of roll them up really good, and smell. And if they smell like almonds, that's that wonderful smell. The smell of almonds is the smell of cyanide, by the way. It's the same smell you get from peach leaves and lots of other things that produce cyanic glucosides. It's not going to hurt you. It's the smell of fruit trees like cherries, apples, pears, peaches. They all have most of them have that smell, but cherries have that smell really strongly. And so if you crush the leaves, see if you don't get that wonderful almond smell. That's probably a cherry tree, it's an interesting question, given where you are, which cherry tree it is. If it's a fuzzy stem and a fuzzy leaf, it's kind of a rare cherry, which we call Prunus alabamensis, the Alabama cherry. Or it may be just old black cherry, which is a great cherry, wonderful cherry in and of itself. I think it's probably black cherry. But smell it and tell me, John. Tell me what you smell. Great way to identify a leaf. Mark, I am so glad you decided to call, and I'm so glad you asked that question. Give me a sense in Lowndes County. Mark wants to is trying to get some grasses growing in Lowndes County, in the middle of the Black Belt of Alabama, this incredible place in Lowndes County, a place I know very well, very dear to my heart. Listen, tell me kind of where in Lowndes County you are.
Okay, Bill, it's a family farm just outside Hainesville in the big swamp area.
Okay, good. And so you are in the real prairie. Most of your ground is, I know the air very well, your clays are, you got a really heavy, dense clay in this area where you did the clear cut, is that right?
That's correct, on the high ground, but then it drops down to the low swamp area. You know, I don't know if you're familiar with Streety Road that connects Highway 21 and Highway 80.
Yeah, yeah.
It's right so there. This is the low area where we're real excited. We got five new clear cuts that are each about 5 to 8 acres each. As I said, cut in October of last year. and want to keep it grass areas instead of standing timber.
So let me ask
your suggestion. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Is the ground at all, does it stay saturated? Does it stay wet, or does it dry out pretty well?
I would say it dries out, but not pretty well.
Okay.
If that makes any sense.
That's not Little Blue Stem ground, by the way. It's not a great place for Little Blue Stem. Little Blue Stem's going to really like the uplands, the higher areas where it's a little drier. You may get a little blue stem down in there, but it's not going to be the best place for little blue stem. The area that you're looking at, and assuming that it did have native grasses, the native grasses that was probably most dominant there, and this is going to surprise you, was bamboo. It was a cane break.
Correct.
And so there's probably a lot of cane in there. And listen, never, ever underestimate the wonderfulness of cane. It is an incredible thing. And once it gets
apply that to wildlife for me.
So the cane was famous for wildlife. Cows, deer, turkey, quail all used cane. It was very important. It's an incredible forage. It has incredible protein. And particularly the young stubs coming up, deer will eat that like crazy.
We have witnessed that the last few weeks, the yellow top and square stem.
Yeah, but the deer will just eat that like crazy. And then there's lots of other things that deer will be eating too. But the bamboo is even good for quail. They will use the edges of it for nesting. They'll nest on the edge of it. They'll come out into more open areas and forage. It's a really important thing. So let the landscape tell you what it wants to be. And that's the most important thing I can tell you right now. You need to look and observe that, see what comes back, and appreciate it, and then ask me about each member, and let's talk about it. But one of the other grasses that I'll tell you that will do well in that bottom, and one that I'm really excited about and I'll look for more and more, is gamma grass. And there will be a lot of gamma grass that comes up in there. And it is a wonderful warm season grass that supports a lot of wildlife, gamma grass. It will have these very broad, dark green leaves. Look it up, gamma grass, G-A-M-A, grass. And I suspect you've probably got some remnant populations of gamma grass there. You might have big blue stem as well. Big blue stem grass will love that bottom. Both of those were often described as ice cream grasses. That is, they were so palatable that the grass was so delicious that if you put cows on it, the cows would eat it out because they would prefer it over everything else. But they're both very good grasses for wildlife, and both of those may be showing up there along with a lot of other grasses. So let that ground show you. Don't try to force it to look like Nebraska, because it isn't. It's going to be its own weird Alabama Black Belt thing, and it's going to be much more beautiful, much more diverse than Nebraska ever could be. So let it happen.
One
fire is going to be incredibly
important. I don't want to get you angry with me, but the problem is the sweet gums and cottonwood trees grow like weeds too, so the wildlife biologist has me driving through the clear cuts on the tractor, spraying a triclosan on these sprouting trees.
Right.
What's your opinion with that? Is there any other way to do it, to keep the trees away?
Yes, there are ways of doing it, but they all require patience. And even the way you're doing it will require some patience. Fire is going to be incredibly important, of course. You cannot do this without some type of fire management. And that's how those woods were managed naturally. That's the fire trickled down into those bottoms. They created these beautiful grasslands.
Oh, wow.
And so you cannot do this without use of fire. The Black Belt is a fire climax system. And it had fires, frequent fires, that were very low intensity because they occurred so frequently. And that's what managed for the grasses. And when you take that fire away, and when you take the big elephants away, which we did, we had elephants and buffalo and other things that were native here that were killed off. When you take those things away, the only thing that will maintain those grasses is the fire, and that will be very important. Beaver can be very important too, and we can talk about that. That might scare you, but beaver are really cool things, and they're great for wildlife. But fire is going to be really important. Some herbicides affect woody plants more than they affect grasses. Now, that's relative, and you got to be aware of that. So you can do damage to your native grasses as well with some herbicides. I've known people who use various herbicides. Just be really careful that you understand what that herbicide is doing, what its residual effect is, and if it does affect your broadleaf community, then you've made a mistake, because the broadleaf plants, the broadleaf flowers, like you were discussing, the deer are already chewing on, sometimes they're affected by those herbicides that are supposed to only affect trees. So that's the only thing. I just would be cautious. Really understand what that herbicide does, and get it on a fire regime as quickly as you can. And if you're not going to use fire, I don't know how you're going to manage it. Had you thought about using fire?
We will use fire when we can. Sometimes it gets too wet, but you'll just have to take those windows to burn.
That's right. And listen, in those areas that are too wet for the fire to burn into, that's where cane's going to thrive, and it may be a native forest situation. Let the fire, and it will take many burns before you understand what the real fire behavior of that landscape is. But let the fire tell you what the land is capable of. And areas that don't burn well will have their own richness in the end, and that will be beneficial to wildlife. And the areas that, and the more you burn, the more areas that will burn. That's kind of the way it works. So it's good. I mean, I think you're on the right path. It's very exciting.
It is very exciting. The area. Thank you very much, and I'll keep you posted.
Please do. I'm always interested to hear. Send me pictures.
I will do.
All right. Thank you. Did I talk too much? Did I run out of time there? 30 seconds. My goodness. Folks, hold on. If you've got you got some calls, we're going to be right back. We're going to be with you. I've got some texts. I got to read through them all. Boy, that was fun talking about grasses. Let's do that again. Let's do it again. Hey, give us a call, 251-343-0106, and feel free to send us pictures, too. I got some pictures here of lawn in grasses, and I'm going to work on that, too. Lawn grasses. Grasses, lawns without grasses, maybe I should say. Hey, we'll be back. Give us a call.
There is no sickness, toil, or danger.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. I got a lot of pictures. I'm not going to be able to get to all of them. Alicia's been emailing me. I got to talk to Alicia for just a second. So Alicia's been sending me pictures for a while. We got a picture of early on. We got pictures of the citrus with these black stuff, the sooty mold on the leaves. And then she sent me pictures of leaf miners. Don't worry about the leaf miners, Alicia. They're fine. It's not actually going to affect your plant at all. The sooty mold's a problem. But those little white flies buzzing around, now there you got it. You finally hit on it. It's the white flies that are causing the sooty mold. And the sooty mold is living on the, if Charlie were here, he would have such a fun time counting. The sooty mold is living on the poop. It's a Sunday morning, but I'm going to use that word. It's the poop of the white flies. And so it's the white flies that are causing the sooty mold. The sooty mold's not the issue. It's the white flies. And so, yes, you need to get rid of those white flies. Alicia, we always tell people it's really simple. It's really good. Get a pump-up sprayer. Get some horticultural oil. It's usually sold as all summer oil here. Get it. Mix it up according to package directions. Spray it on the undersides of the leaves. Spray it again in about 10 days. And you'll control the white flies pretty well. And you won't have the sooty mold problem. And then you just ignore the leaf miners. They don't do a big, they're not doing serious damage. In fact, they're not causing any problems at all. And the horticultural will help a little bit there, but yeah, don't even need to worry about them. Call me back, Alicia, if you've got any more questions. John, I was so glad I was right about that cherry. What if I had been wrong? You'd have made fun of me. But yeah, it's a great way to identify cherry, isn't it? Just go smell the thing. Of course, those leaves up. Smells like almonds. That's cyanide. It's okay. Won't hurt you. We eat cyanide all the time in various forms. It's weird, I know, but we do. Life's the way it is. Let me try to get some callers, and I know we've got some pictures. I'm going to get to those pictures, too, from text. But we've got some callers. I want to talk to the person who sent me the picture of the lawn. We're going to do that in the next hour because it's going to take just a little bit of time. But who's our first caller up right now? I'm listening. What's up from Daphne? I'm sorry, I didn't get the name. You there? Don. Hey, is that you, Don?
Yeah, speaking, yes.
Hey, hello? Sorry for you having to hold on so long. Tell me quickly what's
that's
up.
No problem. Well, the actual property that we have is located in Summerdale, but we live in Daphne.
Yep.
It's about 4.5 acres. It was wooded, not heavily, and we had it totally cleared. We had it all cleared out, and it's flat. It drains, appears to drain rather. It drains well, and we're going around now getting up all the little roots of, you know, the vines and the small trees that were cut down, that type thing. But what we're looking at is, as things are coming up, we'd love to have the natural grasses, and that's what piqued my interest when you said something about natural grasses coming up. But what we're getting is a lot of the Chinese privet, so obviously we're getting that out. And then what I call Dutch sedge, I think that's the name of it, and we're getting a lot of that coming up. But
what kind of sedge?
The big question is, what should we do with the property? Our long-term intent is to have butterflies, birds, that type thing on the back of the property.
So,
and, of course, in front of the house, we'll probably end up putting some kind of grass out there so the wife's happy.
Yeah, so, you know, restoring nature didn't exist in 4-acre parcels back when we had native forest, and so nature doesn't know how to behave when you say, okay, you got to live in a 4-acre parcel. So it sometimes you don't get exactly what you had before because it's just too small an area. Fire would have been incredibly important there, and they would have been small fires, but it may not be safe for you to do that. It's always fun to experiment, and I'm cautious about doing that. I burn small areas, but it can. You got a house, you got other people around you. You have to be very careful about those things. To get back some of that native vegetation, that would have been a longleaf pine savanna. The longleaf pine would have been dominant. There would have been very few hardwood broadleaf trees. It would have been mostly longleaf. The grasses underneath it would have been incredible. I couldn't even begin to name the number of different grasses and wildflowers and sunflowers and all of these beautiful native plants, the asters and everything else that would have been growing under there. There will be some of that left in the seed bank, and you should encourage it. One way to encourage it, and you won't want to do this all over your property, but certainly on the edges of your property, you can begin to encourage that by mowing once a year or sometimes twice a year. And that will keep the Chinese privet down and keep some of the other things down. If you we can talk about, and as you get into this, you call me back and let's talk about this. We can talk about how to create small burned patches that are very safe or that are relatively safe. We can talk about how to do that. But right now, I think your challenge is going to be mowing it once or twice a year. Now, let me tell you, most people are going to want a place to walk that doesn't have grasses up to your waist, which is what's going to happen. And that's natural, and that's what the wildlife love. But in other areas of your yard, closer to your house, you're going to want to mow it down to a lower level.
Yeah.
And you're going to want to mow paths. That's perfectly acceptable. Mow paths that you can walk through those grasses so you don't feel intimidated walking through waist-high grasses. So that's what I would recommend. It would be fun to it's fun to think about that. I wish I could walk it with you. I won't be able to. But think about how to do that so that you get some of that diversity back without feeling overwhelmed by it, because people aren't used to diversity. The natural diversity of Alabama could be scary at times because you don't recognize so many things and you don't know what they mean. But do it in nice big patches. Only mow some areas multiple times a year, and then take some areas that you only mow once and maybe twice a year. The best time to mow is probably going to be, as you're starting out, is probably going to be early March.
Okay.
And I would go ahead and mow in early March, start there, and then see what and go from there. Does that help?
It does. Thank you. Is there any, real quick, is there any kind of, I'll use the term cover crop that we could, any seed that we could put down to hopefully prevent like morning glory and those type things coming up?
No.
No. Okay.
there's a lot of problems with that. You want the cover crop will turn it into another lawn, which will have to be mowed all the time and which will have no wildlife diversity at all. But no, there's no cover crop I can think of that would stop morning glories. The morning glories will disappear with fire, and we'll talk about how to do that. Right now, you're kind of stuck with them, but let's go with this once-a-year mowing situation, okay? And,
okay.
And leave some areas, and then we might have to do it twice a year. That's okay. We'll talk about that. But you stay in touch, and let's figure it out as we go along.
Okay, thanks very much. Thank you for your
You're
show.
Welcome. Yeah. Hey, kind of fun questions today, aren't they? Give us a call, 251-343-0106. We got to take a break for the news.